Since this is a podcast, you can only hear me right now. But if you could see me, you'd be saying, whoa, who is that? It's me, Katie Helper. I'm just wearing the new fashion line from American Giant. Since 2011, they've been making high-quality, long-lasting, timeless American clothes, including their classic full zip, which was named the greatest hoodie ever made by Slate Magazine. Right now, I'm wearing the very stylish moto dress, perfect for feeling sporty and sleek, made with their soft and stretchy French terry fabric, and Aaron got the roughneck chore jacket, so he's looking good throughout his endlessly busy schedule. From activewear to work fits to the latest fashion picks, American Giant has it all. When most apparel companies have shipped too much overseas, making cheap disposable clothes and creating complicated global supply chains, American Giant stands for simple, local, high-quality goods. It's the kind of difference you'll feel and appreciate for years to come. When you buy American Giant, you create local jobs in towns that help stitch communities together. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use the code USEFUL at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code USEFUL. As you know far too well from listening to Useful Idiots, the 2024 election is coming fast. And while we can't predict for sure which candidate will win, we do know that either way, everyone else in the world will lose. Unless there was a fun and easy way to make a little extra cash on the whole terrible contest. That's right, betting's not just for sports fans anymore. Now it's the political junkies' time to shine. We figured that if we spend all our time on Twitter anyway, following the election and endless political analysis, why not put our knowledge to the test? It's MyBookie, a new sports book that lets you bet on the 2024 election from the general election down to who will win each state. If the world is crashing anyway, why not cash in? Don't miss out on this. Pick a side. Use promo code USEFUL to double your first deposit and instantly start with a leg up, only with MyBookie.
All right, welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Matt Taibbi.
And I'm Katie Helper.
You are Katie Helper.
I am Katie Helper.
Are you still happy about that?
Am I happy about being Katie Helper?
Yeah.
I think so.
I mean, has the ratio changed in the last week? Is there more in the happy and less in the unhappy column, or like?
Is this something? Is this you or me? Let's unpack this. Are you feeling less happy about me being Katie Helper, or are you feeling less happy about Matt Taibbi?
That's really funny that's where you went immediately. Yeah. No. I'm asking you. I mean, I'm asking about how you feel. Like you feel about you. I'm interested in you. I'm
wow.
expressing interest in you.
Yeah, this is great. Okay. The question is not how I'm doing, but how am I feeling about being me?
Right.
We should start asking that to people instead of, hi, how are you doing? Just be like, hi, how are you feeling about being yourself?
On a scale of 1 to 10, like how satisfied are you to be
Katie Helper?
Whoever
we're talking to.
Would you say it's a 6?
Six. Matt, you know what? Why don't you start with sharing how you are feeling about Matt being Matt Taibbi? That should be the name of your memoirs. Yeah.
I think I'd probably be hovering at about an 8 if I weren't old. I mean, I think if I had my choice, I'd be this, but 25, at which point I'd probably be 8 or 9, I would say.
Have you ever been a 10 or have you ever been a 1?
I think there have been moments where I've felt 10-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were few and far between, but they happened.
And what were you doing then? Or you probably can't. Maybe you can't.
I probably can't get into that. Right. But you probably had some of those too, right?
Yeah.
Birth of my children, all of those were 10s.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You can share that.
I can share that, but that's definitely.
I would say, meeting Bodhi for the first time.
Right. Very similar kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did not give birth to her. That was done by a dog. Just to squash any potential rumors.
Before that starts crawling around the internet and becomes a thing, then
yeah.
it's just so hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
Once. I know. Once that pooch, yeah, so it doesn't start crawling. What's it, pawing around? So it doesn't start pawing around.
So we have a really good show. We have Dr. Erica Anderson coming on to talk to us about this crazy law that got passed in Arkansas and some other stuff. And we got a whole bunch of politics stuff to get to. So let's just hit it, right?
Yeah, let's hit it.
Let's go for the four food groups. And I have a really good Democrats suck.
Oh, great.
a couple of weeks ago, I wrote an article about the sort of Sovietization of American media and how now that Trump's gone, all these media organizations that spent the last couple of years just sort of beating the crap out of Trump because that was the commercial formula for a lot of these companies. Now, what are they going to do? Like, they, you know, they can't do that to Biden because they can't, that's not their orientation. Their viewership doesn't want that. So they're just basically reverting back at the sycophantic mode.
Right.
And we saw some of this stuff already starting at the inauguration. Remember the guy talking about how the lights in the mall were like Joe Biden's arms wrapped around America?
Embracing, yeah.
No, somebody else was saying it was the greatest inauguration speech since the, you know, Lincoln, and, you know, it got ridiculous. Then there was the whole Biden slashes poverty, like in an instant headline. Biden impervious,
showering money on people,
impregnable to impersonation, because there's just nothing to lampoon about Joe Biden.
He's not funny at all. Matt, you should get a lot of credit. I can't believe people try to impugn your integrity. I can't believe people try to suggest that you're anything but extremely responsible and prescient, because, you know, you yourself compared Biden to Admiral Benson, the character in Hot Shots. And of course, that includes his falling off a plane. And what do we see like a couple of weeks later? We see Biden falling up a plane.
It was pretty close, because there was even the salute at the top. So
we're going to have to keep Well, at least every other week, we'll give the media a Biden comedy packet, because they, you know, because Washington Post thinks it's so hard to make fun of him for anything.
To lampoon him. I mean, just say, how could you do it?
How could you do it?
There's no material to work with.
No, it's not funny when he calls the Pentagon that whole outfit over there.
Now we've moved into this place where a lot of what we're seeing is just these ridiculous puff pieces about the presidency or the executive branch. And CNN did a doozy with Kamala Harris. And the headline in this story is, after 2 months in office, Kamala Harris is still living out of suitcases and she's getting frustrated with it. I'm just going to read the first couple of paragraphs, and then there's one whopper of a paragraph at the end. But so it starts with, it's been more than 2 months since Kamala Harris was sworn in as Vice President of the United States, a historic moment for the country, as Harris is the first woman and the first woman of color to hold the second highest office in the land. Yet Harris, along with her husband, Georgetown Law Professor Douglas Emhoff, is still ostensibly living out of suitcases. Ostensibly is an odd word there, because that means that they don't really know it. So what's going on with there? Unable to move into the private residence reserved for the vice president because it's still undergoing reservations. It's unclear why the renovations are taking so long, said one administration official, but it's a situation that has left Harris increasingly and understandably bothered, according to several people who spoke to CNN about her situation. Quote, she is getting frustrated, said another administration official, noting with each passing day the desire to move into her designated house, a stately turreted mansion 2.5 miles from the White House, grows more intense. You can see where she's currently living, which is the Blair House, the president's official guest quarters. And as you can see, looks like a pretty nice...
It almost looks like a suitcase.
It looks like a suitcase, exactly.
I get the confusion about they're living out of a suitcase. That's what that is.
They're in this place, and I want to read this paragraph about their reaction to living in the Blair House, which is amazing. Although Blair House provides comfortable, even luxurious accommodations, Harris and Emhoff's current surroundings lack the creature comforts of home. Antiques and museum-quality pieces of American history deck each of the 100-plus rooms, which include a gym and a private hair salon. And although the professional full-time staff of more than a dozen provide amenities such as accommodating as a luxury hotel, Blair House does not offer the laid-back vibe Harris and Emhoff are said to prefer when they are home. The couple enjoy a more casual, West Coast informality, with frequent visits from family and large Sunday suppers, the former California senator has said. 100 rooms, it's luxurious, but it just lacks that vibe of hominess that she'd prefer.
So what does she want?
So she wants to move into, if you scroll down further, it's the vice presidential mansion. It's a 13-acre gated luxury place. And if you'll see, there's a pool there. Biden has talked about it. Of course, he says you're on 80 acres overlooking the rest of the city, says Biden. You can walk out and there's a swimming pool. You can ride a bicycle around and never leave the property and work out. Of course, he was off by 72 acres, but or 70 acres or something like that.
So that's the casual digs that they want to be in?
That's where they want to be. Now,
it's cute. It's very cash. It's very homey. Huge pool. Wow. I really want to be there right now. I'm not lying.
Harris has recently been spotted at her future home, popping in for an hour long visit three weeks ago, per CNN. Two administration staff with knowledge of the ongoing updates told CNN that Harris, who likes to cook, requested work be done in the kitchen. But Sabrina Singh, Harris' deputy press secretary, said in a statement Sunday that, quote, there is no work being done in the kitchen at the Naval Observatory residence. So basically she's saying she asked for stuff to be done to the kitchen and it's not being done. Harris is known to derive satisfaction from cooking and she's no doubt hungering for the personal space to do that. She once said in an interview with New York Magazine's The Cut, if I'm cooking, I feel like I'm in control of my life. She's hungering for the space to cook. But that's being thwarted in her 100-plus room temporary
housing. Housing.
So it's just a tragedy all the way around. I mean, like, there's a lot of funny things about this. First of all, the optics of saying, okay, I'm supposed to be in this mega luxurious place already, and I had to wait. What's the deal? That's crazy to begin with. The second part is that this is clearly taking a shot at the Biden administration. The sourcing is all people close to the vice president. She asked for the kitchen to be worked on. It's not being worked on. You know, this isn't Donald Trump she's complaining about. This is somebody else in the executive branch.
So she's basically putting him on blast through CNN?
Exactly. Whatever it is, you know, you haven't moved me quickly enough into my gated...
Right.
Mansion with the heated pool.
It's just so I can cook.
Even though I don't have to because I have a staff of 12 that will do it for me if I want to. But this is the kind of stuff that we, you know, it was the journalism we were missing, I think, during the Trump years, I guess. Right. So
yeah, now we can do the heavy hitting journalism isn't just about Trump.
If this is a harbinger of what's to come, I think, you know, there should be some funny stuff along these lines.
What do you think really is behind this, though? Like, is this just, I mean, I know she wants to be president, but why is this story coming out?
It's one of two things. She wants it to come out, or she has a staffer who thinks that she's going to curry favor with her by putting it out.
Right.
Those are the only two explanations. So it's just odd. Like, you would never put something like this out while you are running for office. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I'm just so unhappy in my 100-room mansion that's right across the street from the White House. Like, you know, this intolerable, you know, why isn't something being done about this?
Yeah.
Not like the kind of thing you would want to put in an ad, you know, for running for office.
Right. So. She fought believing that health that housing is a human right. She fought.
That's right. That's
for her right.
Yeah. To have a gated observatory overlooking the rest of the city and has a heated pool.
And it reminds me of another thing that Kamala Harris did recently, which was hold a conversation about empowering women and girls in the U.S. and around the world with Bill Clinton.
Well, naturally.
Naturally. Bill, right. Friend of Jeffrey Epstein, seen getting massages from Epstein's victim, Clinton. And beyond that stuff, just very much about empowering women and girls by... You know, his Welfare Reform Act was very empowering, very uplifting.
And sleeping with them, you know, I mean.
Yes. We should never forget that Bill Clinton's first work of fiction that we know of that was published is called The President is Missing and the President's Wife is Dead.
I mean, was she killed by like a runaway bulldozer or something like that?
I don't know, actually. How did she die? I'm not sure.
It's a little hostile.
Yeah, that's what I thought was a little hostile. And he referred to, in one passage, he refers to, he wrote it with James Patterson. Mm. And they refer to a woman's breasts as the girls. Those two words should never be conflated.
Right. The right word is...
Women. Right. Call them women.
Women. Right.
And
yes,
spell
exactly.
It with a Y at the end.
Right. Yes, exactly.
As she walked in, her women bounced.
Bounced.
Yeah, I want to, now I want to know what the thing was. I'll find that out. We can put that in our Substack only. We can do a reading of that passage in our Substack only. That's great.
It's a little hostile no matter what. Like, you know, if you're writing a novel and the wife character or head explodes like a cabbage in the first page, like you're probably saying something, you know.
Right. I mean, even if she has an aneurysm and your husband is blind, you're being robbed, even if she dies in her sleep, I would say anything based on the death of your wife when you are creating a fictional world. I'll just say I don't know how Hillary took it. Oh, wait, I found it. There's a female assassin whose code name is Botch, who, when we first meet her, is described strolling seductively through an airport with a décolleté, allowing just enough bounce in her girls to make it memorable.
That's a little window right there.
Yeah, into where the soul would be of Bill Clinton. Okay, so for Republican suck, Mark Finchin sought to overturn the presidential race. Now he wants to run Arizona's elections. One of the leaders of an effort to overturn the results of the presidential race in Arizona wants to oversee the next presidential elections as Secretary of State. He filed a statement of interest Monday to run for the post. He had previously hinted that he might run for office, having gained notoriety with his support for President Donald Trump and his claims of wrongdoing in the last election. He was elected to the House, just so you know a little bit about him, elected to the House in 2014, reelected last year. He's worked as a power supply consultant, a realtor, and an officer with the Kalamazoo Public Safety Department in Michigan. He cannot run for a seat in the chamber next year due to term limits. And he said, I'm running for Secretary of State because we can do more to protect the voting franchise of every legal voter in Arizona. We can do better at providing...
Legal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We can do better at providing transparency of who is lobbying for whom. We should improve the services that this multi-million-dollar agency provides to consumers. And he went on to argue that that government can and should be more customer service oriented. But the lawmaker said just a month ago it would be premature to wade into the race for Secretary of State or any 2022 contest for that matter. Finchin noted he'd only begun his new term in the House. That's 2 years of service to my constituents, and I think that I've got work to do for 2 years. That's what they expect. They've already hired me for 2 years, and I think it's poor form to begin pursuing another job while you're working for somebody. He's a friend of Trump, Bannon, Giuliani.
So he's a dick and he's running for
office. Yeah, basically that's it. Yeah. He blamed violence on leftists at the January 6th thing.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah, and he initially refused to comply with the request from the Arizona Republic for public records relating to his travels to Washington, D.C. that day. This guy obviously takes voting rights very seriously.
He wants as many people to vote as is possible.
Yeah.
As long as they're legal.
Right.
Which probably has a very specific definition. But...
Right. And yeah, he just thinks that the election was stolen from Donald Trump, too. So who doesn't think that?
Right. Yeah. Who doesn't think that? Yeah. I thought this was Republicans suck. What
do you... Oh, not Republicans are awesome. Right.
Yeah. No. We're kidding. We're kidding.
We're kidding. Yeah. Yeah.
We're kidding.
I mean, it's kind of exciting, right? It's like someone who doesn't believe, who fell for election fraud myths wants to now oversee elections.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've seen that before. Although I guess there's going to be a wave of those of such people.
Right.
I mean, it's become abundantly clear that even more important than voting now is who's running the Secretary of State's office or who's counting the votes or, you know,
right.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
No,
like,
yeah.
Who's in charge of hiring the company that does the processing for the Iowa caucus or whatever it is. Like, all these decisions are more important than whose campaign was run the best. It's like a secondary political battlefield that's opening up. But that's good. You know, that's a good Republican suck. I like it.
And also, we should mention that there's also a group called Rural Arizonans for Accountability. They've launched a recall effort against him. RA.
RA? Okay.
Rural Arizonans for Accountability.
Oh, RA. RA.
Yeah, RA. Right. Yeah. Because of his repeated claims about voter fraud and the stealing of the election.
That's a good name. I like that. That's a good acronym.
Yeah.
RA.
Yeah. Sorry, one more thing. He's now deleted Twitter account, used the Stop the Steal hashtag 62 times from November 19th to January 6th.
Can't be the record, though, can it?
No, I'm sure not. No. But maybe the record for anyone running to be...
Secretary of State of Arizona?
Yeah, vote counter.
Yeah, Useful Idiots listeners, if you can get on that and tell us who's actually got the record for most Stop the Steal hashtags, that we might be interested to find out who that person is. All right. Isn't that weird? Can we do that now?
Yeah, of course.
I'm excited for this one. So you heard the story about the, hey, did you hear about this?
What?
You know, the story of the Suez Canal.
Oh, yeah, I did hear about it.
And, you know, that gigantic Empire State Building-sized tanker that ran aground and sort of screwed up the whole world for weeks inspired a lot of memes. Here's something that's not a meme. Here's something that's true and is a very funny piece of video and fits on Useful Idiots. This is the route that that ship took.
Okay, so explain to the people what the title of that video is, please. Cargo ship draws dick and balls, then crashes in the Suez Canal. And we got to have this person on the show who made that video.
Definitely.
Wow. This was in the Military Times, not just some random person on YouTube.
Yeah. So the confused pattern of the Evergreen as it made its way towards the Suez Canal, it actually...
Canal, wow.
It traced a picture of, like, Katie, how do you want to describe that?
Can I read the headline or you want to read it, Matt? No, it's yours. It's yours.
move over sky penis. We've got a sea penis now. So it
that's good. I like that.
The thing traveled in the shape of a
penis. That's all there is to say about that. You wanted me to get into the state of it?
No.
No, okay. It's just a penis. It's just a penis. Yeah.
But it's just funny that ended up.
Oh, of course. That's very funny. I just felt like, sorry, when you asked me to describe it, I felt like there was some extra detail I was missing on. So it's just simple penis-shaped route.
Right, exactly. And the whole thing about move over sky penis, we've got a sea penis now, that is in reference to the infamous sky dong. Have you heard about this?
No, I want to see that, though. Penis sky dong was our duty, Navy says. So whoa.
That was from 2017. Okay, so this happened. Like, I think it was over Washington that this appeared.
That would make sense. Right?
And then there was an investigation into what happened and what caused this. And that led to the release of the following video.
But
this
then, like, yeah, there was an investigation into it, right?
This was like the WikiLeaks.
Oh, my God. This is collateral sky penis. Not it's to make light collateral murder,
sky penis, yeah.
And draw a giant sky penis. That'll be awesome.
Yeah, we can do it your flight. Oh, we turn dinosaurs into sky penises.
That's a sure great idea. We can do it.
Yeah, I'm going to basically draw a figure eight and turn around and come back. I'm going to go down, grab some speed, hopefully get out of the contrail layer so they're not connected.
Contrail, that's what it is, right.
Dude, that'd be so funny. It's like airliners coming back on the way into Seattle. Just this big fucking giant penis. You can almost draw a vein in the middle of it, too. Yeah, see it there? Just kind of like pigtail it to the left, because you already got the split. Is that what you're doing, split?
Yeah, come back for speed.
That's what, dude.
Yeah, balls are going to be a little offside. That's
right. All right.
Okay, balls are complete. Gotta navigate a little bit over here for the shaft.
Oh,
yeah, which way is the shaft going?
The shaft will go to the left.
It's going to be a wide shaft.
Yeah, I don't want to make it just like three balls.
It does. Right, and the head of that penis is going to be thick. Man, I gotta say, that looks pretty good. You are a natural born artist.
Man, this is like the biggest penis I have ever seen.
All the airliners have seen that yet. You like do pass, make sure it's kind of scribbled out. I mean, it's staying there quite a long time. It's not dissipating at all.
Yeah, it's kind of a good point. Okay, I guess I'm kind of going through a pass again. Hopefully it doesn't, make it look more veiny than it already is.
Can't have that.
Hey, well, I tell you, that's a great penis right there. That's a great penis. Make the Navy proud. Oh, damn.
That's amazing.
I think that's enough, Lou.
Yeah, that's great. And what was that, Matt? Can you explain how that video was ascertained?
There was an investigation into the sky dong and
the
Navy
long and the short. You can just give me the long and the short of it.
The Navy Times.
Oh, come on. Nothing for that? The long and the short of it?
The long and the short. Oh, sorry, that was great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Officials with the Naval Air Station Whidbey Island said Thursday that their aircraft was responsible for the penis-shaped sky droppings spotted by local residents. The penile depiction was done by an EA-18G Growler with Electronic Attack Squadron 130, also known as the Zappers. A concerned mother who spotted the phallic renderings told KREM that she was upset that she might have to explain the drawings to her kids. So actually, you know what? This is interesting because this reveals me as a hypocrite, right? Like, I was the one who was saying that maybe the complaints about that wooden penis.
I know,
right? And here I am.
Yeah, I was the one. I just want to point out, I'm consistent.
You were consistent.
I believe in freedom of artistic expression.
Apparently, the FAA was notified, and they said they told the TV station in Washington State that it, quote, cannot police morality. So, yeah. So, good story. But anyway, but it all comes back to that Evergreen tanker, which not only is that captain is already going to take as much guff as any person on Earth for having interrupted world trade for however long, but now it's going to turn out that he drew a dick on the way to doing that.
Right.
That's going to be interesting. So,
well, I do have to, by the way, there was kind of a self-defense. This is what the pilot wrote, I guess, during the investigation. Soon after, I realized the extent of our actions, that the contrails were remaining longer than predicted. I remarked that we needed to take steps to try to obfuscate it. I flew one pass over it, essentially trying to scribble it out with my contrails. That pass was ineffective.
Ineffective.
Yeah. Hmm. So he knew he'd done wrong, but it wasn't. And according to the Navy, it was not premeditated or planned. So that, of course.
But they lied.
They at first they did. Right. They kept it hidden, I guess. And then they confessed.
Yeah. No. So apparently
if I wish the Navy spent more time doing crimes like that, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, it probably costs $400 million for that to happen, but.
But less than whatever they do when they go to other countries.
Yeah. So the Military Times piece about the more recent incident involving the Suez Canal notes that the story was actually broken by Vice World News. And then they said that this recalls the Skydong incident, and they actually had a very elegantly written paragraph I just want to read out. Recalling the other story, on that fateful November day, a magnificent contrail penis appeared stark against the midday sky in your Naval Air Station, Whidbey Island. The Navy subsequently claimed credit for the misunderstood work of art, amazing and appalling many who dared gaze upon it. Who dared gaze upon it. That is journalistic writing, folks.
Yeah.
Not dare to. Who dared gaze upon it.
Misunderstood? What does that mean?
I mean, people were offended when they should have been, you know, they
grateful.
Should have been... Yeah, grateful, or enthralled by it, maybe.
I like that, actually. I kind of like that. That was the Military Times?
It was, yeah.
I like that they're protecting their brothers in arms.
Right, yeah. Like, this is even better. The Ever Given's rendering, however, what they're talking about, the boat, was evidently not done in the same vein, pun intended, as past examples carried out by the U.S. military, because it does not appear to have been executed on purpose. So this is like, you know, the chimpanzees getting together and they actually do write Shakespeare. Anyway,
That was weird, but that's a cover up.
Right. Yes.
They're lying. When they say premeditated, I see. I thought that they meant it was like, this is interesting. What defines premeditated? Again, we always come back to the law, which is cool because neither of us is a lawyer. But what what constitutes premeditated? I feel like a premeditated, there's a difference between premeditated and intentional, intent, having intent. So
this
wasn't premeditated, I would say. They were just flying around and...
Well, I think it's premeditated. They were talking about, hey, wouldn't it be funny to draw a giant penis?
That's right.
You know, I mean, unless you want to say that's like, you know.
Isn't there some time passage that like is required for, this is an interesting thing. We got to have a lawyer on hand.
A lawyer on, it's like, extreme emotional distress. And I suddenly had to fly around and do a contrail penis.
I think premeditation does require some planning ahead, pun intended, ahead of time. But I guess, right? Because like if you see someone doing something, you run over and murder them right away.
Right.
Is that premeditated? I'm sure this is a really easy answer. But
Yeah, I mean, I think premeditation can happen in an instant.
Okay, yeah.
I'm guessing. I don't know. We could.
Yeah, it was intentional. We could literally Wikipedia this.
Yeah,
or have a lawyer on.
But we know that the tanker intent. Didn't do it on purpose.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. That, I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
Do we know that?
We don't know that for sure.
We don't have evidence. Well, you're guessing. I'm saying that I'm waiting for the investigation. I'm waiting for a review. And
I mean, if it turns out that was the plan, like, hey, I got an idea. Let's draw a vessel tracker penis.
Yeah.
And we ended up, like, causing...
Vessel?
Five... Right, exactly. Yeah, I think if that's what they were trying to do, yeah. And this ended up happening, I think they'll all be shot into space at the end of this. But
yeah.
Anyway, what do you got for isn't this
hopefully
isn't
with the hopefully with the into the arm into the open arms of a penis contrail sketch. Okay, so for Isn't That Terrible, we have a terrible, really terrible story. So reading from Inside Edition, nearly 200 baby. Oh God, there's a video. We got to show the video. Trigger warning. It's really sad. Nearly 200 baby turtles rescued after being found wrapped in plastic. And it's a mixed story, as you'll see.
Cases on Ecuador's Galapagos Islands. Officials got suspicious while those suitcases were going through X-ray machines at the Galapagos Ecological Airport. Each of the teeny reptiles wrapped in plastic, all less than 3 months old. 10 of them died. Officials saved 185 of them. Jorge Rosillo manages the airport and believes the intent was to ship the turtles to mainland Ecuador for trafficking. Rosillo also says the species of turtles that originates on the islands is highly sought after in Asian markets. As for the surviving turtles, they're now safe in the care of a team from the Galapagos National Park, where they can hopefully grow freely and enjoy their natural habitat.
A team intended.
This is Inside Edition.
That's terrible. I mean, look, the net, I guess, is good because out of the almost 200, 10 did not survive the ordeal. But a new team at the Galapagos National Park. And it's just terrible. I mean, they're cute. They're little wrapped up little turtles. And they should not be wrapped up in plastic. And they should not be, nor should they be trafficked. And I saw Matt trying to not smile and trying to, like, shake his head. And I felt like you were, am I wrong? I knew that part of your heart was saddened by it, but I saw a little flicker of
the little like shadow of what remains of my Grinch heart.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean,
it's okay. I guess it wasn't that funny because usually there has to be a higher level of slapstick for you to think it's funny.
Well, I mean, if they opened the suitcase, found them in the plastic, and said, "Oh my God, this is terrible," and then ate them, then that would be more funny.
Right. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, like, you're right.
You know, they found them in the plastic and took them out of the plastic, and you know, but it's that. I guess that's a good outcome.
Yeah, it's a good outcome. So it's isn't that a little terrible? It's just terrible that they're being trafficked. Yes.
Why were they my question is: are they being trafficked as pets or as food?
I don't know.
As aphrodisiacs.
I almost don't even want to. Do we want to know the answer?
We got to look into that.
All right.
Like what's the market for those kinds of animals?
Yeah.
I like turtles generally. I think turtles are definitely a big net plus.
We're turtle allies.
I'm pro turtle. That was sad.
That was sad. That was terrible. Yeah. Erica Anderson is part of the UCSF Pediatric Endocrinology Child and Adolescent Gender Clinic. She's the president of USPATH, United States affiliate of the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, and board member of WPATH, which is World Professional Association for Transgender Health. She's also the past president of Northern California Group Psychotherapy Society. Pretty good.
We want to talk to her about the new law in Arkansas, which essentially is a ban on providing care to trans youth. It's kind of sweeping and even describes the entire process as experimentation in the title. So it's a pretty radical thing. We want to ask her about it and about some other questions that have been controversial of late, and should be really interesting.
Thank you so much for joining us. We wanted to have you on to talk about the recent bill that passed in Arkansas, which is making history as the first ban, would-be ban, against accessing gender-affirming care for transgender minors, including reversible puberty blockers and hormones. So I guess one question is that the, I'm just reading that from NBC, is that the right way to frame it? And also, of course, what is your response to this bill?
Well, thanks for having me. This is a very important and ominous development in the culture wars in the USA between people who are responsibly caring for trans youth and those who are opposed in every way to such care. The scientific community has spoken very clearly that this is medically indicated and responsible and humane, that affirmative care for youth is likely preventing self-harm and a lot of distress from trans and gender creative non-binary youth. One of the elements of the Arkansas bill, as I'm advised, is that it prohibits surgeries. And it spends actually more of its text describing what it prohibits in the surgical realm. And what the bill itself reveals is a lack of understanding of trans youth care, because, of course, surgeries are very rarely performed on minors and generally are performed on adults, and only with the concurrence of an interdisciplinary team that has followed the young person and the supportive family. If it's a minor, for sure, a supportive family. So those of us who do the work in this area are alarmed. We're deeply troubled by the fact that legislators feel that they have the wherewithal to dip into the sacred relationship between doctors and patients and intervene between the decisions of adults who are parents and a decision that they're making in collaboration with their children and providers. There are few, none known to me, but there are a few other areas of healthcare where such efforts have been mounted to interfere in these ways. And so I think it's an ominous sign. It's a slippery slope, but it's also not completely surprising given that there's so much bigotry and ignorance about transgender people in the United States and transgender healthcare.
The title alone of the bill is—it's like it's designed to be maximally provocative, right? It's known as the Arkansas Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act. So they're saying something even before you get into what's actually in the bill. Just by passing that, they're making a statement. Aren't they?
Exactly, and that rhetoric, which is now common among the people who are opposing responsible youth care, has been shared even in Congress. Senator Rand Paul used some inflammatory language and grossly misstated trans youth care by drawing an analogy between female genital mutilation in his queries of Dr. Rachel Levine, who was subsequently affirmed by the Senate for her position with HHS because she's so eminently qualified. And clearly he was trying to bait her.
Yeah, I remember you saying that you wanted to throttle him after he used the term mutilation.
Throttling, yeah. With not using deadly force, but being forceful.
Just sort of a semi-throttle, yeah. So this bill, it's not even something like, you know, a mandate that parents be informed or be part of the decision. It's actually just a ban. Is it not?
That's my understanding. It's an outright ban, and there are sanctions against health providers who provide such care, and in several states there are actually criminal sanctions and penalties, including the possibility that a professional's medical license could be canceled, withdrawn.
Yeah, another there's a similar bill in Alabama, right, that's being considered that would establish criminal penalties.
I'm told there are as many as 24 where there have been various discussions. Of course, it's hard to monitor because there's committee discussions and then there's, you know, legislation that maybe is proposed but withdrawn or proposed. But what we're told from people who are monitoring is that there are as many as 24 or more states with similar bills in under consideration.
I wanted to know how something that I think comes up is people, I mean, it's ironic that this is called life-saving, right? When obviously this is going to have the opposite impact on young people. Can you talk about that? And I mean, just anecdotally, someone, a doctor already said that he saw more people being admitted to the emergency room for suicide attempts, young people. Michelle Hutchinson, a pediatric doctor in Arkansas, testified in front of the state Senate last Monday that just after the bill passed the House, there were multiple kids in our emergency room because of an attempted suicide just in the last week.
There are a lot of young people who are distressed by their gender dysphoria, their conflict with their identity. And the path forward is gender affirming care. All the consensus is very clear among the professionals and the scientists. That's how to prevent the mental health condition of these young people from worsening. And we know from all the studies that have been done that transgender youth are many more times likely to have suicidal ideation and even attempt to self-harm, including suicide, than the general population. In fact, one study widely quoted is saying that as many as 41% of out transgender people admit that they have attempted suicide. So, you know, the plight of transgender people in the US is dire. We see signs of hope, but the last presidential administration, along with allies in conservative circles, worked very assiduously and consistently to oppress trans people. And of course, President Biden has reversed some of those directives, but the prejudice that's behind them, the previous bad actions, and the ignorance that fuels them are still present.
There seems to be, you know, a very cynical, as we see in this bill, attempt to pretend that these bills are just in the best interest of children, that, you know, they're doing this to save them from regret or to save them from being rash or impulsive. Obviously, as you said, that, you know, people who are denied gender affirming care will suffer mentally from that refusal, right?
They will.
And then I feel like there's, how do you talk about the suicide, the rates of suicide in a way that doesn't feed into, or I guess what is your response to the conservatives who try to pathologize all trans people basically as lost, misguided, in need of help?
I point to the scientific documents that say otherwise. Our own federal government in the U.S. 5 years ago issued a document under the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, which was focused in part on conversion therapy, which was an effort to change the sexual orientation of young people in the past. It's outlawed in many states, and it's decried by all responsible professional organizations. The document itself covered gender minorities and sexual minorities, and it said, and it's available on a government website, SAMHSA.org, that differences in sexual orientation and gender identity are normal variations. And no less than the World Health Organization, through its International Classification of Diseases, has in the upcoming 11th edition moved gender incongruence, the term of art in the ICD, from psychiatry to sexual health. And they have also been very clear that being a transgender person does not in and of itself connote a psychiatric illness. But the legacy of that view continues, just like even though gay and lesbian people have won their rights, and most people in America know someone personally who's gay and lesbian, and I suspect if we queried most Americans, they wouldn't say that gay people or lesbian people inherently have a confusion, a psychiatric illness. It's going that way with trans, but the scientists and the professionals of necessity have to lead, not politicians. Well, we have a kind of ongoing experiment in America, because we have different cohorts or generations who have come to terms with their identity and come out and transition at different ages, in different periods of development in our culture. from 25, 30 years ago when the culture was very unaccepting of trans people. And most trans people, in my view, have PTSD from very negative experiences that they had coming to terms with themselves and getting the care that they needed. We also know that trans people, like other minority groups, are subject to minority stress. So to the extent that the society regards them as a unique, if not disturbed, confused minority, they're going to be subject to all kinds of mistreatment. I would say many older people who are trans can recount in very, very specific and personal ways the ways in which they've been mistreated and abused and not given, not accorded not only their rights, but any sort of decency in terms of what they really need to be themselves truthfully and in a healthy way. And our hope is the work with young people will help this younger generation avoid some of that legacy of mistreatment which occurs over generations. There's a study that I'm aware of that was published a year or so ago, which interviewed hundreds of transgender adults, average age something like 50, and both trans men and trans women. And what they asked them was, when did you first know you were trans? And then at what point did you come forward to ask for help from professionals? The gap was on average 20 years. The society was so unaccepting, so negative towards trans people that most in that era were afraid of the consequences, afraid of the implications for themselves, afraid of bringing shame on their families and alienating themselves from their families, maybe having or even likely having experienced discrimination in access to healthcare, employment, and so on. So that tells us a story, and that is the surveys now say more and more young people are embracing a gender or sexual identity different than straight or cisgender, and they're experimenting, trying to learn who they are. And it's much more acceptable in younger generations than ever before. So one would hope that the society is moving in the right direction overall, even with the setbacks that we're talking about today.
Last question for me. I remember covering the debate over gay marriage. I covered multiple presidential elections, so I had to go around the country asking about these issues. And I ended up being kind of surprised at how quickly conservatives, were convinced on that issue. What's it going to take for a consensus to form on this issue? Because this feels different to me. Like it feels the reaction feels different. The debate feels different.
Fewer people in America know personally a transgender person. Okay. And the stories that they've heard historically in the media are not favorable. You know, the TV and film depictions of trans have been deplorable. You know, about all the bad things. But you got Dr. Rachel Levine now as Undersecretary of Health and Human Services, who's going to do a good job. You got people like me. We're both trans, okay? We're responsible professionals, respected in our fields. And as more and more of us are out and known, I think the stereotypes are going to be blown up. My personal experience is also relevant here in that I was on a TV show in Sweden where I came out to people on primetime television 5 years ago in Sweden, one Sunday night in October. 2 million people in Sweden saw me that night. And I can't tell you the outpouring of support I got. People who said, my dad, pick a relative, you know, my brother, thought all trans people were crazy. And then he watched you. And he doesn't think that anymore.
All right, so that was great.
Yeah. And if you want to hear our extended interview with Erica Anderson, as well as our segment called Extremely Online, go to usefulidiots.substack.com.
Rate, review, subscribe. You know, we're now on Substack, so we would love it if you, at the very least, signed up for the free list so that we can get material to you. It's different from the old show in the sense that we now have stuff that's coming throughout the week. We did an interview this past week with Marsha Brown of the American Prospect, you know, about a media controversy involving CNN. And that was live. And we want to let you know when we're going to be doing stuff like that. So
yeah, so you gotta
sign up. And even if you don't subscribe, you know, become a paying subscriber, we'd love to at least be in touch with you and let you know when we've got stuff
right.
coming up.
So you can subscribe for free is what we're saying, right?
Right.
And then, but if you want to get the real great content, we do ask you to become paying members.
You got to show that green. Yeah.
You got to make it rain.
Got to make it rain.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, thanks for tuning in. And we'll check in with you next week.
Yep. And find us on usefulidiots.substack.com. Yeah. Usefulidiots.substack.com.
And usefulidiots.substack.com. Say that 8 times fast.
Usefulidiots.substack.com.
Great. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Usefulidiots.substack.com.